Speak up.
You're listening to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. We're the campus and community radio station at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast from unceded Coast Salish territories.
You're listening to Speak Up on Monday, this 3rd of February, which, wow, January just flew by, apparently. Maybe you're listening to this in the car, maybe you're just having breakfast, or maybe you're walking by the station on the Burnaby campus. But I hope this show can ease your start into the new week. When I came up the mountain today, there was actually snow, which I really didn't expect to see any more snow this year. But today is actually supposed to be really nice. So if you're planning to do anything outside this week, then you should probably aim for today, because tomorrow it's supposed to snow, apparently, at least in Burnaby. And from Wednesday to Saturday, it's just going to be rain all over again, like the last weeks. And then Sunday is actually supposed to be really nice, 8 degrees and sunshine. So yeah, today and Sundays are the days to go for if you're planning to do anything in the terrible cold outside. So yeah, for this show, I'm going to start things off, as always, with my segment On This Day in History.
On This Day in History.
So first up, we have on February the 3rd, 1815, the world's first commercial cheese factory is established in Switzerland. This is the beginning of the industrialization of cheese and where you can buy cheese in the supermarket today. Then we have on February the 3rd, 1947, it's Canada's coldest day. In Snag, a small village in the Yukon, temperatures of minus 62.8 degrees Celsius were recorded, and this is the coldest temperature ever recorded in all of North America. At temperatures this low, any exposed skin would freeze after just 3 minutes, and when you breathe out, your breath would freeze and fall to the floor in the form of ice crystals. But there is an even more interesting effect that's caused by these low temperatures, and that's what's called a temperature inversion. Basically, what happens is that when the warmer air sits on top of cooler air, it creates a sandwich of air near the ground, and in this sort of sandwich layer, sounds can't escape upwards like they usually would. And that's why you can hear stuff that's happening really far away. And Snag locals at this time reported being able to hear people's conversations from up to 5 kilometers away. And to give you sort of an idea of what this temperature inversion sounds like, here's an example that I found on YouTube. So this is to explain the visual part of this video. Basically, what's filmed here is just a regular sort of meadow that's completely clear. There's nothing or no one inside, and yet still you might be able to hear some strange sounds, but I will let you make your own idea of what that sounds like. So what you can hear here is basically just regular animal sounds, sort of animals running around somewhere, which you shouldn't be able to hear because in the video there's really nothing inside at all. So yeah, that's the effect that Yukon, Snag Yukon residents were able to experience on Canada's coldest day with minus 62.8 degrees Celsius. And lastly, more history. On February the 3rd, 1979, YMCA by the Village People peaks at number 2 on the pop single charts. And here's some fun facts about it. Number 1, it was written right here in Vancouver, BC. And number 2, the song is about a gay culture, of course, and the YMCA as a hookup spot with a bit of double entendre. And even today, this flies over so many people's heads that it's played in even some very conservative Christian churches and communities. They played the song in my church, obviously not knowing what the song is actually about. And personally, I find it to be super hilarious that exactly the people who you wouldn't think would play this are playing this, basically. So yeah, next up, gonna play some music, and then we'll be back with a very fascinating segment about dreams.
Sounds funny, but I just can't stand the pain. And I'm leaving you tomorrow. Seems to me, girl, you know I've done all I can. You see, I begged, stole, and I borrowed. That's why I'm easy. I'm easy like Sunday morning. That's why I'm easy. I'm easy like Sunday morning. Why in the world
You're listening to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM, and you just heard the Sky Ferreira cover of Easy by the Commodores from the Baby Driver soundtrack. Next up, I'm going to give you a new segment of my show FAQ. This is FAQ, answering the questions you've always asked yourself, but never bothered to look up the answer for. So in this episode, I want to talk about the question, why do we dream exactly what we dream? This is going to be a three-part segment. The first part is going to be an explanation. Second part is going to be a somewhat examples for what I'm going to say in the explanation. And then third part will be some dream-themed music. Okay, so to answer the question, why do we dream what we dream? I want to say just ahead, a lot of this info is based on a Medical News Today article titled What Does It Mean When We Dream? And to start this off, I want to talk about three things about dreams that most people get confused about. So number one, we may not remember dreaming, but everyone is thought to dream between 3 to 6 times per night. So all those people who say, I never dream, basically are wrong. Two, it is thought that each dream lasts between 5 to 20 minutes. So it's not that one dream is actually the whole time you're sleeping, which is also something a lot of people might think. And number three, around 95% of dreams are forgotten by the time a person gets out of bed. So this is why, this is what creates these misconceptions, basically. So whenever you think you're not dreaming, you probably are, even though there are some factors that can diminish your ability to dream, which we will get into later. Now, a lot of this stuff about dreams is still pretty unclear and sort of undiscovered, especially when it comes to what causes most dreams. But basically, what we do know is that when we sleep, we go through several phases, and one of those phases is REM sleep. And in REM sleep, brain activity is increased, our pulse quickens, and we start to dream, basically. It should be noted that REM is not the only stage of sleeping that we can actually dream in, but it's where the majority of dreams come from. And most of these dreams tend to be full of emotional and vivid experiences that contain themes, concerns, dream figures, and objects that somewhat correspond closely to waking life. I think most of us can relate to this. And these elements put together create a reality of sorts, making it an experience with a lifelike time frame and connection. Now, I hate not having concrete answers on the show, but the reality is that we don't actually know what the evolutionary purpose of dreams really are. However, there are some very popularized theories, and the most popular ones are either that they represent unconscious desires and wishes, or that they're just interpretations of random signals from the brain and body during sleep, that they are a form of consolidating and processing information gathered during the day, or that they actually work as a form of psychotherapy, that you can basically go through the stuff happening in your everyday life, in your dreams, and maybe somewhat find some sort of closure or some sort of way of processing the information that you pick up in your day-to-day life. Now, lastly, here's a potentially useful fact about dreams. If you go to sleep whilst drunk, you might find it easier to fall asleep, but your body misses out on much of the REM sleep it needs, and that's why you might wake up feeling like S-H-I-T. That is not a word I'm supposed to say on the radio. And to sort of get some perspectives on the kind of dreams that people have, here is a Streeter, an interview that I did with some SFU students about the weirdest dreams that they have ever had. What was the weirdest dream that you ever had?
I had a dream where my dad was getting squished to death by Ursula from The Little Mermaid. Do you remember that scene where, like that last scene where they're fighting and then Ursula gets super big? Yeah.
That's so terrible.
Yeah, no. I was, 7.
I remember one dream where I was good at volleyball. That was a real far-fetched one.
Is that bizarre for you?
Yeah, that was very bizarre. ever imagined.
You got a story?
Yeah. So the weirdest dream that I once had was I was walking down, like, I was in, like, my school, and I was walking down the hallway, and it didn't seem to end. So and there are, like, multiple doors on the sideway. So I just turned towards the door. I opened that door, and turns out it leads to the same walkway. And I literally did that, and you know what the weird part is? I woke up, and, like, I was all sweaty, and I was, like, I was literally tired of running in my dream. So, like, that's, like, one of the weirdest dreams that I have. I don't know, like, if you can top that. Like,
that's so trippy.
Yeah.
I know. Whoa. It's trippy. That's actually trippy. And that's, like, and that's more trippy because I don't drink or stuff, so it's like, what was I doing?
Well, the one dream I had was a really long time ago. It was like I was in the Krabby Patty from SpongeBob, and there were three ninjas outside, and, like, I was it was a nightmare, and I was really afraid to get out because the ninjas would kill me. But then I did get out. The ninjas, they just started, like, beating me up. But then I said, no, this is my dream. I control it. And then I woke up, and it was so weird.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
So there you go. Those are some of the weirdest dreams that SFU students have. Next up, to continue this dream theme, I'm going to play you some dream themed songs. And first up, we have The Dream Synopsis by The Last Shadow Puppets, which, in the same vein as those interviews you just heard, is a description of a very strange and somewhat bizarre dream. This is The Dream Synopsis by The Last Shadow Puppets. We'll be right back.
just thought I always feel sick without your baby. I ain't got anything to lick without your baby. Nothing seems to stick without.
You're listening to Speak Up here on CGSF 90.1 FM. I'm your host, Carl. And next up, as February is also Black History Month, I want to play you some clips. These are originally from our programming from 2017, and one is about militarizing Africa. And this is for Black History Month 2020.
The ravaging of Africa has been enriching Europe and North America for more than 500 years.
First, European empires imposed slavery and colonialism on the continent.
After 1945, the United States took over as the dominant neo-colonial power.
Through the Pentagon and the CIA, the U.S. government has fueled 14 wars in Africa.
It is American invasion, but the U.S. role is everything.
The U.S. has used the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund to systematically demolish African economies and health and education and sectors.
Par les stratégies de la Banque mondiale, les pauvres seront toujours pauvres, les riches seront toujours riches.
This military and economic war enables the looting of Africa's resources by Western multinational corporations.
Shell is into the politics of Nigeria, you know. We might say we have our independence, but economically, we are still being colonized.
Washington's genocidal imperial strategy has killed more than 26 million Africans, but failed to suppress popular resistance.
We have refused to die. We are living for Africa. No matter what they do, no matter what power they have.
You are listening to The Ravaging of Africa, a four-part documentary series about the destructive impact of U.S. imperialism on the continent. I'm Asad Ismi.
I'm Kristen Schwartz.
Voices and sounds in this series were recorded at the 2007 World Social Forum, held in Nairobi, Kenya.
This is Militarizing Africa, the opening episode in our series. For the next half hour, we focus on the wars in the Democratic Republic of the Congo and Somalia. Stay tuned. Nearly 80% of the strategic minerals the United States requires are found in Africa, including 90% of the world's cobalt, 90% of the platinum, 40% of the gold, 98% of the chromium, 64% of the manganese, and one-third of the uranium. These minerals are needed to make jet engines, cars, missiles, electronic components, iron, and steel. No industrial society can exist without these substances. Africa also accounts for 18% of U.S. oil imports, a number which is expected to rise.
Africa is the most war-torn region in the world, with armed conflicts going on in 9 countries: Democratic Republic of the Congo, Sudan, Ethiopia with Somalia, civil war in Ethiopia, Uganda, Chad, Nigeria, Morocco with Western Sahara, and Algeria. The U.S. has provided arms and military training to participants in all of these 9 wars. Washington has done the same in another 5 wars that ended during 2002 to 2006. These are the long civil wars in Angola, Sierra Leone, Burundi, and Liberia, as well as that in Congo-Brazzaville.
According to William Hartung, co-author of the report Deadly Legacy, U.S. Arms to Africa and the Congo War, the U.S. sent $1.5 billion in arms and training to Africa during the Cold War years, 1950 to 1989. This, quote, set the stage for the current round of conflicts in the region, unquote. He further points out that, quote, the military skills and equipment supplied by the United States are still being used by combatants in these wars, unquote.
Following the end of the Cold War, the Clinton administration undertook a wave of new military training programs in Africa. In the 1990s, the U.S. gave military assistance to 50 countries in Africa out of a total of 53. The U.S. has 4 different military training programs for Africa.
Since 2001, the Bush administration has doubled U.S. military aid to Africa and quadrupled U.S. arms transfers. In February 2007, Bush set up a new Pentagon command for Africa called AFRICOM. It is headquartered at the huge U.S. military base at Djibouti in the Horn of Africa, close to Saudi Arabia and Yemen. The base houses 2,000 U.S. troops, mainly special forces, as well as CIA operatives. Given its strategic location, AFRICOM's purpose appears to be control of African and Middle Eastern oil.
The most destructive case of U.S. military intervention in Africa is the war in the Democratic Republic of the Congo, the heart of the continent. The war has killed more than 4 million people since 1998 and destroyed the second largest country in Africa. The Congo is the richest country in the continent, holding the world's biggest copper, cobalt.
The full spectrum of house. It is delivered to your ears by legendary DJ System Disco.
Kiwi DJ System Disco brings you a different spectrum of house each week. He got funky, he got deep, also go disco, French, forget it, electro, punch it, tech, no, and there's boo, and uplifting. Also, did I mention funky?
every second Saturday night from 9 p.m. until 10 p.m. and every Sunday morning from 6 a.m. until 7 a.m.
This is the full spectrum of house.
Next up here on Speak Up, as part of our Black History Month programming, we have a segment about the history of Harlem and the Harlem Renaissance.
Black History Month, featuring the Harlem Renaissance. The Harlem Renaissance refers to the period after the First World War, when cultural, social, and artistic endeavors flourished significantly in Harlem, New York. In 1914 to 1918, mass migration of African Americans from the rural South to the urban North encouraged many to settle in and around New York, bringing together a mix of cultural and artistic tastes. Harlem became the epicenter of literary and musical endeavors, almost all encouraging racial pride among African Americans. The Harlem Renaissance also enabled an avenue for writers and artists to discuss their everyday lives through their art. Such figures include writers Langston Hughes, County Cullen, and Zora Neale Hurston, artist Aaron Douglas, Palmer Hayden, and Melvin Johnson, and photographers James Van Derzee and Roy DeCarava. This new avenue to pursue their own artistic endeavors, to write about themselves with pride and economic success, and engage with fellow artists was revolutionary at the time. Unfortunately, the Harlem Renaissance did not have an effect in breaking down racial barriers established through Jim Crow. The Harlem Renaissance flourished after the First World War, but began to fade in the face of the Great Depression in the 1930s. Remembering the past ensures history is never forgotten. Today, on this day, we remember the Harlem Renaissance.
Stay tuned to learn more about Black history makers.
Next up, to sort of tie into this, I'd like to read you two poems by Langston Hughes, and both of these are essentially about dreams in a bigger spectrum, which ties into the overall theme for this episode. I find this very interesting how these poems, the transition from the first to the second one. So I'm going to read you the first one. This is Dreams by Langston Hughes. And it goes, "Hold fast to dreams, for if dreams die, life is a broken-winged bird that cannot fly. Hold fast to dreams, for when dreams go, life is a barren field frozen with snow." So this is the first one, Dreams by Langston Hughes. And the second one, which was released much later in his life, is called Harlem. And the way it goes is, "What happens to a dream deferred? Does it dry up like a raisin in the sun, or fester like a sore and then run? Does it stink like a rotten meat, or crust and sugar over like a syrupy sweet? Maybe it just sags like a heavy load, or does it explode?" So yeah, I find this very interesting, the transition to what I consider a more optimistic to a somewhat, less optimistic poem. I'm not going to be giving my interpretation of this, because I don't think I'm in the right place to do so, if you understand what I mean. But still, I found this really interesting, Dreams and Harlem by Langston Hughes. Next up on this show, I'm going to play you a CD by Bywater Call, which is also titled Bywater Call. And the first song of the CD is named Arizona, which you are going to be hearing next here on Speak Up. Studio 6, CGSF's video series, captures high-quality video recordings of live performances.
I think it was a bunch of different things. Like, I was getting tired of writing about myself, and I was looking for new inspiration, and I thought it would be a good way to develop some lyrical material that would be exploring, it could explore many different sub-themes within the context.
And interviews with impactful and inspiring artists, as well as engaging conversations with community members about the issues that are most important to their communities. Watch all of the Studio 6 live sessions on CJSF's YouTube page or on our website at cjsf.ca/studio6.
Ever wonder what's going down at the CJSF offices? This is the show for you. It's Thursdays on the Hill.
So the first question for today is, how is your year going so far?
Fine, I guess. My 2020 started with a back injury, and I'm through the magic of chiropractory. The chiropractor and stretching. I am starting to feel normal again, so I guess good now, but it's been a bit of a rocky road to start.
Out of all the SkyTrain lines, which one is your favorite?
Favorite. That's a tough one. Mm-hmm. I definitely ride the Canada line the most, and given that it is sort of newest and freshest, I like it, but it makes me mad because it's very seriously under-engineered and is already at capacity 10 years after being opened with no possibility of expanding its capacity. So that like really drives home that point to me every time I try to get on the train at 8:30 on a weekday and have to squeeze in like a sardine.
Yeah, personally, I'm very fond of the Expo line. Mm-hmm. Because for one, you have the, like, where it shows all the stations, it actually has lights.
Yeah, that's fun, for sure.
And then secondly, it has those seats that you can, like, at the end of every, like, wagon.
Yeah, they're can, like, the front seat, so you can, like, as if you're driving.
That one, and the one that you can, like, that's that kind of secret. You
that's
know,
folds
that you can,
down.
Yeah,
yeah,
exactly.
I like that, for sure. There's something about the, like, the classic 1980s SkyTrain, that which is the Expo line. Expo line is the first one.
Yeah,
and that was originally just like down and around the loop.
I feel like since like 2000 was the Millennium line, mm-hmm. and 2010 was the Canada line, I feel like it's time for a new SkyTrain.
We did just get the Evergreen line, which if you want to go up into the Tri-Cities, into Port Coquitlam, etc., that's a very
really?
Nice... Yeah, it goes all the way right up to like Coquitlam Center Mall, and it's called like Brewery Alley or something. There's a whole bunch of breweries and stuff.
It already exists?
Yeah.
So there's a fourth SkyTrain that exists, and I didn't even know about this.
Yeah, it's just... It's kind of an extension of the Millennium line. So some trains go down it and then turn south after Lougheed and then go down around the loop towards what's it called, the one where you switch trains to go to Surrey, Columbia,
yeah.
But then every other train breaks off north and then goes up along North Road up into Port Coquitlam. Yeah, I have personally never ridden
yeah,
it, but...
I need to try this.
Apparently, it's like a big thing to take the train out there, go to a bunch of breweries, and then ride the SkyTrain.
My opinion on what the best SkyTrain line is feels invalid now that I haven't even tried all of them.
Yeah, you don't have the full experience.
Oh, damn. Well, anyway, for the last question, coronavirus is in Vancouver. Are we all going to die?
Probably. Well, I mean, we are all going to die eventually. Yeah. Are we all going to die from coronavirus? It could
it's
happen.
Possible.
When
I came home on Tuesday, I had like a weird eye twitching. I was just like,
yeah, well, now
so it starts.
If the virus doesn't kill us, then the anxiety about the virus will.
Possibly.
Right? So, or the like widespread panic rising from misinformation about the virus. I mean, we're about due for a pandemic, right?
Yeah, true. it's been too long.
Yeah. I had the swine flu when that was like
really?
The big, yeah, I was a student here at SFU, I missed like an entire month of school. I had
Wait,
to just
what's
like,
the, survival rate of the swine flu?
Better than they're saying for coronavirus, like certainly less deadly, but it was, there were casualties. It was weird because usually with an illness, a virus. It's like the young folks and older people and people with compromised immune systems that are at greatest risk of mortality. But with this, with the swine flu, it would, like, young, healthy men were at highest risk of mortality. So that was scary. But I just got to sit around and eat popsicles. And I couldn't even, like, I couldn't read. Like, it was tough to concentrate on paper or, like, anything. So I just sat on the couch and, like, sort of half-watched TV and ate popsicles for 3 weeks.
What a thing to tell people, though. I had the swine flu.
Right?
Because that's, like, a global thing that everyone, like...
Totally. People knew know. At the time. Yeah. And,
I want to say it's kind of cool that you had the swine flu.
Yeah, sure. Swine flu survivor.
Like the cow bumper or something.
Mm-hmm. Swine flu survivor on board.
How is your year going so far?
It's blistering by.
It's going by so fast.
So fast.
Yeah,
it
I agree.
Is already 1/12th over.
I know. It's like, that's always January, though. Where you think, like, you have a whole big year in front of you, and then it just passes by. For the next question, you're stranded on a desert island. Which SkyTrain line do you take with you?
Oh, I take the Canada line to the airport.
Oh, that's smart. That's very smart. I like that. I like the logical thinking behind that. So, Jacob, how's your year going so far?
My year is going pretty well. I mean, everything has its ups and downs. I mean, it's just another year for me, this old fogey who's been doing radio for so long. But I'm so glad that I've been able to do radio for so long, along with the other things that keep me happy and passionate in my life. So, yeah, there's some downs, there's some ups. But if I had to say if I'm doing all right, I'd say I would.
Well, I hope you have more ups and downs in the coming months.
You as well.
And for the next question, Jacob, what is your favorite SkyTrain line?
If I had to pick one of the three, I would probably pick the Millennium line. Because when I was growing up and getting involved with the music community or just straight up going downtown, the Millennium line got me there. And I knew exactly how long it would take for me to get there. Because my mom's house, where I was living until I was 23, I knew exactly, it would take an hour, exactly, almost, to get from Port Moody to the Granville Station downtown. And then from there, the world's my oyster.
Would you say you feel a very intimate connection to the Millennium Line?
Oh, Lord, no. I only take it if I have to now.
Okay. And well, for the last question, coronavirus is in Vancouver. Are we all going to die?
No, of course not. Sensationalism around this is whack. And if not, mostly overtly racist to, like, freak out of people. But just keep your hands clean and avoid poking yourself in the eye, and you should be fine, people.
Well, thanks for the interview, and I hope you don't die of coronavirus in the coming weeks.
I'm sure I will, and I'm sure I will not
I'm sure
die.
We all will.
I'm sure I'll be just fine, and you will be too,
yeah,
along with you, dear listener.
You're listening to Speak Up here on CGSF 90.1 FM. Now with a guest slash co-host in the studio. This is...
Deborah.
And Deborah, my theme for this episode has been dreams. I've talked about weird dreams, how dreams come to be, why we dream, what we dream. And I'd like to ask you, do you have any dreams in... Did you have any dreams in the last few days or weeks that you remember sticking out in any interesting sort of fashion?
I don't really have dreams, do I? Are you talking about dreams where you sleep and then
Well,
for the past week I wouldn't like my dreams, but then yes, I kind of had this dream about 2 weeks ago, and then I find it happening
In real life. Oh my god, that's the creepiest thing ever.
And then I'm
ever.
Like, whoa, I'm a prophetess. Now I can see. But then I really kind of, I'm not the dream type. I really don't have much dreams, many dreams. Like some like people actually really have dreams and they actually believe in their dreams.
Mm-hmm.
I really don't have many dreams, but then
I work a lot with my instincts. I think, yeah, I don't, but then I work a lot with my instincts. Sometimes when I'm going to do something, I get this premonition, I get this thing about it, and then I don't go about it.
Whoa, are you saying you're psychic?
I'm not saying, but probably.
Maybe you are.
I'm not sure I am. But probably I've learned to pay attention to some of these things. I think we all have it, but then it depends on you. Some people don't really pay attention to it, but then for if it happens, like if I have a premonition about something or an instinct on something, it started off by paying attention to it. Like I pay attention to it a lot, and then I realized that okay, so this actually works for me.
Yeah, you're like going through all the possibilities of what could happen, and then if something actually does end up happen, it might just be that it's because it's a likely thing to happen and not because actual mystic things are going on.
Well, you can't fault people for their believing in something which is mystic.
Yeah,
you can't fault anybody. I think everybody has their own sort of beliefs and attitude towards life. And we have to appreciate everybody's own in our own special way. But then I would really, like, I was very excited that I had a dream, and then I went to work and it actually happened. Like, I saw not the whole dream, but then some part of it happening, and I didn't really pay, like, I didn't remember it till I go home and I'm like, whoa, wait a minute, what happened today? I think I saw this thing in my dream some time ago, but then it doesn't really, I don't, at the end of the day, I'm not drawing conclusion to the fact that, okay, I am somebody that believes in things that are mystical, or like, I don't know how to put it. Like,
Do you remember what the specific thing was that you saw in your dream?
Kind of personal. Should I put this on?
Yeah. No, if it's too personal, then no. What I would have done is, like, you know those, like, websites or magazines that, like, they tell you that they can interpret your dreams? And, like,
no.
If I see a horse in my dream, it means I want to ride away into new job opportunities or something.
One time I was on the train, and then I met this man, I think he's Indian, and then he gave me a coupon where he's like, I could come see him, and then he read my palms and like, no, thank you so much, I really appreciate it, but I don't think that works for me. I don't believe in that.
Yeah, I'm the same, but like, if it wasn't so expensive, I would try like a psychic reading.
Oh, it's that expensive?
It's pretty expensive, right?
Wow.
That's what I thought. I think it's like so much, but like, I just want to know, like, what's up with those people who like who do this as a profession, and like, if they, you know, if they have good intentions, right? Because even if it's not real, they might still actually be trying to help people in a way, or maybe they just like want to scam you, and that's kind of what I want to know. Like,
I think it's a scam. It's my I'm sorry for people out there, but then it's a personal feeling. I feel it's a scam actually, because people are able to read things. Like you're saying, it's just a psychic. People are able to read things based on happenings.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so the fact that the person is, things are happening, and then the person is actually, because I'm not sure, I don't know, I've not been to places like that before, but then I'm sure probably they ask you some questions on every, like, they ask you some questions, and those questions, if you answer them, they lead you to the answers they give you.
Yeah, you know what would be really fun? To have a psychic here on the show, in the studio, to tell us like about the energies they feel in this room or something. So, if you, dear listener, are a psychic or know a psychic who would be willing to come on the radio, you can call to 778-782-2573. If I said that too fast, you can also Google CJSF and you will find our phone number to call for what I would find super cool as an interview opportunity.
Well, I would sit in and enjoy that interview. I don't think if I walk out of the studio, I'm going to take anything away with me.
I see, I'm the same. I'm very skeptical. But at the same time, like, I've never done it before. So who knows? Maybe on some level, there is something to it. Or at least, like, I don't know.
I think last week, Wednesday, I was at
I was in Surrey, and then I overheard this conversation of a girl. She's like, when she started dating, she and her boyfriend went to the people who read the palms, mm-hmm. and they kind of had a session about whether this thing is going to lead them somewhere or not. And apparently, it's like, yes, it's going to lead you somewhere, but they are no longer together.
Ooh, so the reading was wrong, apparently.
The reading was wrong.
Wow, that's some hard evidence against psychics out there.
Yeah.
So again, if you're a psychic and you want to prove yourself, CJSF into Google, and then you'll find our phone number and you can call us. This hour of Speak Up is very close to being over. Next up will be, as always, Democracy Now! And you will hear from us again next Monday from 10 a.m.
to 11 a.m.